welcome to another broadcast of Project Urantia on the Artists First World Radio Network. An ever-growing number of people are starting to come to the realization that just possibly our Earth history has been influenced by beings not from this planet. In my humble opinion, one human being who knows more about that than just about anybody alive, that's Michael in Maui. Hi, Michael.
Hi, D-Man.
Hey, I saw Riley on TV this week.
Did you catch? Oh, great.
I got a call from one of my work buddies that says, hey, listeners, I don't know if you caught it. It was only about 4 or 5 minutes, but Rob Dyrdek, the guy that's the skateboard guru, the young man that's on MTV and has the Fantasy Factory, those kinds of places. The idea was he does skateboard designs. He's become a millionaire and entrepreneur in the skateboard world. And he had somehow heard about Riley. And now he believes that some of the symbols that he's putting on his skateboards are somehow related to the mothership. And he asked Riley right there. He had him on his come into his office, and Riley said, no, if you were on the mothership, you weren't there when I was there. But so Riley was polite, but I think he was just patronizing the guy to make for television. But anyway, the whole thing was probably 6 minutes tops, and we can get past that now. So how are things in Maui, and what's going on in the world today?
Maui's a bit windy as far as the weather is. Things are seeming to progress here, just pretty much normal. However, around the world, there's still some there's still continuous to be some anomalous activity, whether there be strange sounds or massive die-offs of animals, And I did ask about it to whoever was able to answer it, as far as my celestial friends, and one of the Shedunes came forward and tried to explain it to me. And as you say, me and my one brain cell was getting a difficult time to quite understand it. However, I think I got some of the things down. In fact, even our scientists have come up with some ideas that are following pretty close to what was explained to me. Anyway, that's something that has come forth.
Well, folks, your questions are always welcome. Send them to us at dj@artistfirst.com. Even if you're listening to an archive, we keep track of them. We try to throw them into a folder and bring them up on the next program. Before we get too far into this program, there's probably listeners still tuning in who heard about the Bigfoot program last hour. And one of the topics on that, Michael, was horse manes. You know, the big hair on the back of the head of a horse? Farmers in Oregon and other kind of like out-of-the-way places are finding wild horses and horses on their ranches with braided manes of rather intricate detail. And I asked the 100,000 people listening last hour if anyone had the slightest idea what could cause that, and I got zero answers. So I'm asking you, Don Monroe is speculating that it's a Sasquatch doing that. I don't know if it is. That's what he thinks it is. And there are excellent photographs on the website for you Urantia listeners that are turning in. Go to the Bigfoot section of our website. You can see these photographs. Now, I know I'm throwing this at you cold, and you haven't had any time to think about this. But Michael, what in the world? I mean, just picture a horse, and then down from its mane is an 18 or 19 inch braided thing, just like girls would do at a beauty shop, only they think some of the hair is so much longer than the rest of the mane that it might have come from the tail. Anyway, mm-hmm. What in the world would do this?
Probably, if it was someone in the world, horses, if they were wild, someone else could quite, keep the horse calm, enough to do the work. One of the interesting things that we have around our planet is the involvement of celestial artists, you might say, who love to work with living material. And living material, one of the most famous of all crop circles. They require the use of, basically plants. However, it's interesting to note that they have also been known to express their artistry in other ways, and even to the animal kingdom, giving them a kind of beauty. In fact, some of it may have already been introduced into the way in which some of the animals' genetics have come about, you know, to what gave the zebra its stripes. And this, the celestial artisans are part of that, that program, which could have been part of that illustration. However, on the short, in the near term, like braided hair or things like that, I wouldn't doubt that some of these artisans are able to express themselves on other living beings, like an animal, like a horse.
Well, Don, Mr. Monroe was talking about he had gone to Hawaii, and they had discovered examples there. But there are no known, there's never been any reports of Sasquatch in Hawaii, have there?
Not really. It's quite the other way. I mean, little people.
Well, so your theory of the, maybe these aren't Sasquatches at all. Maybe they are celestial artisans. Some of this stuff is ridiculously intricate. Circles inside of circles with little things sticking off and little bows down there. I mean, when you think of a Sasquatch, this giant 8 or 10 foot creature, his fingers must be like, big, fat, and thick. And you would think, boy, that would be pretty tough to do those little tiny intricate things they've done with such large hands.
Yes, it would. I wouldn't think it would be a Sasquatch who would be in my opinion, a real being, a real perhaps lost cousin of ours. However, they don't seem to display the type of innate ability. They're never spotted with clothes or anything like that. You know, so therefore, I wouldn't think that they would be the ones who would create such intricate designs in natural material, living material. And this is one of the key factors of celestial artisans. They love to work with living material.
Well, a rancher that comes upon a wild Mustang, if you go near it, it will stomp you to death. First of all, you'll never get near it. So it's hard to think, a big, giant, lumbering 10-foot Sasquatch going to walk over to this horse and the horse is just going to stand there? I don't know. I mean, in my mind, maybe it does. I don't know. There's lots of weird things that happen in nature. But that kind of, at first thought, is kind of a little screwy. But, boy, if it's not Sasquatch, if it's our celestial friends, makes a lot more sense. Because would a celestial artisan like that braid the mane of a wild horse, knowing that probably no human being will ever see it?
Perhaps, or perhaps they feel that it would end up being observed, studied, as a anomalous type of artifact on a wild horse. I would say that stranded messaging is typical of our life forms. Basically, goes back to DNA, RNA, that structure of our spiral encoded information that makes up the instructions for our life. But it's also found in the knotted symbols that were used for sending messages across the mountains. People would encode that onto a rope. And in I think it was Peru or somewhere in South America that it's still being done today. And this would be, of course, something much more sophisticated, perhaps, as a messaging that, maybe another community of celestials volunteering who has that artistic ability, wants to pass a message along. And many of the messages that we get along that line, which are truly real from these artisans, are encoding a type of message to us, some of them being, one of the ones that stands out as far as a crop circle message was one of the crop circles that looks exactly like the power controllers, these beings that were and still are around the sun, and having these appearances looks just like them, and this would be very interesting there, that braided or knotted, I guess, 18 inches or longer of hair. Would be interesting to see if there was some kind of code that people who are familiar with the types of knotted coding would be able to come out, and decode from there.
You know, when you first mentioned that, I went back to the page, and folks, I'm looking at Horse Mane 1 JPEG. It's not a double helix, which is the DNA molecule, but, I think that would be rather hard to braid a double helix. You know what I mean? That would be a little beyond even probably what you can do with hair. But boy, as you look at that very first one, I don't know, the way it is, they've used different colors and different fashions. Then as you scroll down, as I was looking at these, you were talking about crop circles. And look at number 4, ladies and gentlemen. Look at image number 3 and number 2 and number 1. They're all completely different shapes. And, is it a form of communication? That's a great idea. I'm even more intrigued and have less idea of what's going on here than ever.
Well, one of the wonderful things about it is that the Celestials did leave us and myself some indications about how and who will do some of the communication. Some of it, comes out as Celestial artisans, again, classified with working with living material. And this is an indicator quickly to deduce that they were involved. It's their handiwork. And it's usually beyond our own ability, or we can duplicate it to some extent, but not to the highest extent, or perhaps some of the stuff that's probably shown there. I don't even know what you're looking at, but I can just understand what it could very well be.
Well, folks, whenever you listen to this broadcast, whether it's in 2015, all those archives will still be there under Bigfoot Central. You can go look at the exact photographs we're discussing. We'll leave all the materials up there forever. I would think 100 out of 100 people that see these photographs would have to all agree that this is intelligence, that this is not wind blowing it all of a sudden like this or some other natural occurrence. Intelligent beings of some sort, whether it's a prankster or a celestial, someone did this.
Yeah, the first two things I deduced was that, intelligence. But one more very important factor is that they can approach and work with wild animals without causing the wild animals to go, and run away out of terrible fear.
Yeah, no human will walk up to a wild Mustang and, you might have a rope and you can, out in the field, and then what are you going to do, tie it up and then braid it? I don't know. It just seems so ridiculously implausible for a human being. And for what? Out in the middle of nowhere in Oregon, what would be the purpose? Now, let me just say one thing that after I said it earlier, I asked you, do you think the Celestials would do these activities knowing that maybe humans wouldn't see it? And gee, after I said that, how arrogant it must be, I must be, to think that, gee, the Celestials only do art for our benefit? They may be doing it just because they want to do it.
Yeah. And it's an expression, yeah. And, of course, those that are involved, those Celestials that are involved here on our planet and do it in a benevolent sense, in a nice way, they have volunteered to do it along to help us realize our connection to the rest of the universe of sentient beings. We of course try to realize that we are, you know, connected to the rest of the universe basically because we are made out of the same materials. You know, when it comes right out of there, but we only recognize a certain amount of material. We don't recognize the full range of what there is. And this is some of the things that we are, you know, quickly learning about. That is much of what I'm about. You know, I've been able to, you know, at least glean a little bit more information from the Celestials, having experienced some of them. And one of the things that they possess is, you know, is overcoming our natural fears. Now, there's a lot of story about terrible fear that can come about, and that's true. Animals having, you know, being calmed down is also true. You know, Daniel and the lion's den, that kind of concept. And interestingly enough, when I was in the classroom environment and a Dano was introducing himself to me, and he said he was a Dano, I said, "Oh, you're Daniel. You mean like Daniel in the Bible?" And he knew exactly who I was talking about. He knew about the prophet Daniel and was well aware of the record that we kept it biblically. That's why he was able to point out to me that there's information here on planet Earth that gives insight into their activities. And one of them was the Bible, but he was pointing out another book, which is the Urantia book, which has a lot more information concerning their activities, including the activities of these celestial artisans. But there are others that are working very, very hard right now, and they're actually defending our planet against some solar activity that is finding its way onto our planet in a natural way that could, if allowed to progress in its path, could really be severe in terms of damaging our own human life and our own civilization. And these things are to a degree being worked with and controlled by our celestial friends. One of them is our magnetosphere. They say they have a ship on the sun-facing side of our planet that works with the varying changes of the magneto modes of influence in which our planet is being showered with right now, the solar, much more than the solar wind. Anyway, those are evidenced in some of the acoustics that have been coming aboard, coming around, and our planet has been able to so far shake some of it off, and have done nothing more than some acoustics. But there have been some real kill shots that have hit some of our animals, which they told me were actually glanced off into the ocean, because they say the ocean is a large sink of energy that can absorb a lot more energy. But sometimes there are animals in the way that get hurt.
Well,
anyway,
before we get too far off the topic, if you don't mind, I just want to bring up, because it is absolutely related to the topic of Bigfoot and Celestials. Now, most of our listeners will know who Linda Moulton Howe is, the former HBO producer that's on Coast to Coast AM all the time. Yes, she said on a Friday she would join Artists First, and on Sunday her husband had talked her out of it. We still love Linda, and she's welcome here anytime. I highly respect her because she is one of the true journalists in the business of paranormal science. She will not take on a topic. I presented her a topic that I thought was earth-shaking. She did not feel it had enough journalistic integrity for her to get into the topic, which I respected her for. why am I saying this? Because I saw a news clip the other day. It's Linda Moulton Howe talking, and she is saying that she is pursuing a story, and if she believes in it, there must be some serious evidence about this, where a UFO descends onto a farmer's field, a beam of light comes down, and a Sasquatch is delivered to the ground. Your thoughts, Michael?
Well, you know, Riley said that he had Sasquatches that he met on the mothership in New Jerusalem, and they had habitated some of the more natural-looking areas, the park atmosphere and the lower levels. And I wouldn't doubt that there have been some who have volunteered to come forth, not in human form, but to take the Sasquatch form to adjust or to really learn about truly natural, the natural environment, the wild and woolly environment that we live in, much more closely with the actual wild and woolly environment, because the civilized area is something perhaps they don't need to know much more. Because they have been probably very aware. It seems they are quite aware of our human capabilities. So, and they tend to want to stay in the forest and stuff.
Well, I guess
so that follows alignment that if they are being dropped off, they are being dropped off in one of the one plans that I know, which is for celestial education.
Well, just because, you know, I only saw what was in the trailer for Ms. Howe, it doesn't mean that the Sasquatch originated there. I mean, they picked you up. They picked Riley up, right? And they brought you back. So it doesn't mean that they didn't come here in the first place and take it up, and now they're bringing it back. You know, just because the witness saw it descend from the craft doesn't mean it originated there. Maybe they came and got it, and they were running some tests on it, and they brought it back. Just like they do with some folks, you know what I mean?
Yeah, maybe.
I mean, I guess that's a possibility, but I'll be very anxious to see that program when it comes out. And Linda, you're our offer always stands. You're welcome to start a show here tomorrow. Just give me a call. You got my number. Okay, well, I didn't mean to get off on tonight's topic on Bigfoot, but there's some pretty fascinating stuff going on out there, and hopefully you listeners are intrigued as much as I am. All right, well, let's shift gears. You mentioned just moments ago that there are still beings on the surface of the sun and crafts out there. Have the satellites, I suppose now NASA is screening those pictures, so that if anything shows up, they're editing them or just deleting them, right?
No, they're there to be seen. Yeah, they're still there to be seen.
Can you see those? I mean, the big spheres that were in the... That's almost been 2 years ago now, hasn't it?
Yeah, they show up every once in a while.
And they're still... Do they still appear on NASA's website? I haven't looked in a long time.
Yeah, they're still there.
Okay, why isn't this headline news? Why isn't every news agency, every newspaper, every radio station talking about this? Just like you wonder how a horse's hair can be braided, how can something exist in 50 million degree plasma in the sun's corona? Anybody got any ideas? I mean, and then those of us that bring this to people's attention, well, we're considered idiots. It's very frustrating.
That's because they're you know, really not made out of the same stuff that we think they're made out of, you know. Everything in a UFO has got nuts and bolts and rivets. Well, that's, of course, totally wrong. But this is a way that, you know, we try to bring things. Instead of trying to ascend our understanding higher, we try to bring all that stuff to our level. And then we end up with total confusion.
Well, the days are approaching. I don't know how many more days we have left till December 21st, 2012, but it's not all that many. Have you gotten any feelings of ecstasy or gloom and doom? Are we all in trouble, or is it going to be the greatest thing, or is it going to be a bunch of nothing?
Well, it still remains that the Celestials are involved in keeping it, you know, away from being, you know, total devastation, because we are having trouble, and... we can see that in the die-offs of the dolphins in Peru, as well as the Atlantic, pelicans, both sides. These are caused by holes in our magnetosphere that have been drilled in by excursions of anomalous clumps of plasma-type material that have conjoined with between our magnetosphere and our ionosphere, and literally kind of like leaked in, funneled into points in which have been guided, where the blasts have been guided, much like, you know, how we think of lightning hitting, and we stick a lightning rod up to try to make sure it doesn't, you know, it hits a place where you want it to hit versus someplace you don't want it to hit. In the similar sense, the celestials are trying to guide these blasts of energy, and causing acoustics, they're causing burns on some of the animals, and some blasts of energy, cosmic energy, that have killed animals. And they actually have a mechanism, some of them do, that are you know, powerful. So these things could have hit us. They could have, you know, hit a city, but they had been glanced off. Some of them are continuing to be glanced off. So another interesting thing that I was able to pick up, at least in my inquiries that I just made about those things a little while ago.
Well, as the Earth's magnetic poles change, which has happened, scientists believe, bunches of times over the billions of years the Earth has been here, but just for the sake of discussion, let's imagine that this process is taking place now. I think most scientists agree it doesn't happen overnight. It could take thousands of years, but so there's a gradual progression of the changing of the poles. During a period of time like that, are we more susceptible? Do we need more of their help because our magnetic protection is somehow compromised during that period?
It's definitely true, but the celestials And like I said, their artistry, some of them, like I said, celestial artists love to use living material. Others who, you know, were involved in helping shape different generations of life have used these types of events in terms of, you might say, wiping the chalkboard clean and starting over with almost a new slate, you know. And basically, some of it was repeated, but with a different basis, like from moving from an older form of life to a higher, or more something more in the direction of mammalian type, from a, you know, more reptilian type or something. They've used these events in the past. However, in this particular time, where human sentient life is all aboard our planet, and it is a very important part of the project Irancha, and they don't want to, you know, wipe it out because it's taken, you know, millions and millions and millions of years in order to accomplish this. And what has happened in the last few months gives me an indication that this event that they've used is, which was probably tied in with a magnetic polar reversal or shift, along with some other cosmic events that have in the past led to an extinction process, is actually happening once again. And apparently it's known about, because as I said before, when I was at the New Jerusalem, I was, you know, noticing how busy these people were in terms of getting ready for some kind of a big event. And that's many years ago, so they've been preparing for quite a long time. And I guess the event does not necessarily happen all of a sudden, like a flash, bang, and it's done, but it may be a progressive state, taking literally years to accomplish. But I think even biblically it takes years to accomplish the turnover, you know, typically talk about 7-year period. But anyway, right now I'm looking at the explanation that the celestial gave to me, and I found that there is a scientific name for this events that are happening right now that are causing some of the kill-offs and acoustics that are running around our planet, and it's called a flux transfer event. And last week I mentioned how a Japanese scientist noticed that the sun was having multiple poles. In fact, one's around their equator, is creating another set of poles over there. And this is something that is related to some of the activity that is happening, because it creates a different type of polarized discharge or solar wind, as well as what rides the solar wind, which could be some of the cosmic plasma and solar plasma that ride the wind, and we essentially scoop it up. And our planet does through this magnetosphere, and it finds its way into some of these flux transfer events, which are holes or funnels, you might say, that sort of suck this energy in and then allow it to discharge into our atmosphere and into our, right into our terrasphere, right where we're at. And it is something that is unique in terms of time and related to perhaps that polar shift much more now than ever before, because there's so many things that are pointing toward the fact that we are indeed overdue for this shift and are having the chance to prepare ourselves to make ready, as well as celestial work in terms of some of the rescue mission that may be necessary in certain key areas.
Well, you know, you say the polar shift is, scientists believe, is overdue. They think, for instance, I'm sure there's lots of overdue examples, but one that comes to mind is Yellowstone, way overdue. Can something like a polar shift cause or contribute to perhaps volcanic activity?
Absolutely. And if you notice, there's a tremendous amount of new volcanic activity that has all of a sudden begun to escalate around our planet. And it's probably also causing some of our, you know, unique, helping cause some of our unique weather too, because it's, of course, clouding up our atmosphere a bit in ways that our volcanoes are able to do. And I think that's something that we can be looking forward to in time and see it only getting worse and pointing again to some cause, and that cause is how our planet is actually behaving itself. It's being twisted about, you might say, perturbed in some way or another internally, which causes, which can cause, in fact, the actual magnetic reversal. Our generator is our core, which is not static. It's not a solid dipole that just stays fixed, but one in which it's more like a magneto that tends to generate a magnetic field because of moving conductors in a field of electrons.
Well, I don't have any information as to the last time Yellowstone erupted, but it, from what I hear, if it erupts again, or obviously when it erupts again, we're talking an extinction possibility event. Certainly for the United States, just about everybody in the country is going to have to be fighting for their lives minute by minute. We're talking
Well, even if Yellowstone was as it was shown, and I think it's been more recently determined that Yellowstone actually, super caldera is actually made in two parts, so there were actually two super calderas that conjoined themselves to make this Yellowstone caldera. So if only half of it were to explode, it still would be pretty devastating, if not, you know, just as devastating as what people foretold.
Well, and wouldn't that indeed be, hopefully, they'd rescue some of us. You know, that would be an evacuation event for them. I mean, one would think that from those dire predictions that you know, I don't know, if that meets the threshold that the Celestials believe it's time to take some people off. Wonder what that number is. You here to care to speculate what you think the... I know you know, it's not a knowable number to us right now, but, you know, I wonder what that number is when the Celestials are looking down going, well, that one's only going to kill 100 million. That's not enough. Is a billion enough? I wonder what that number is.
One of the important numbers is when it would drop below what would be considered a replicable amount within a zone.
Oh.
Now, civilization, of course, requires organization. And if we break down to a number which is much too small, we would essentially re-enter a primitive state. And that's not desirable. So that number, of course, is under a million people. Scattered throughout the globe. So it would be a much larger number which would threaten civilization. So to keep that our planet from falling below that number, which will be able to continue the civilization, I'm not sure what it would be, but it may be somewhere in which the Georgia Guidestones perhaps have outlined the maximum sizes being.
Which is 500 million, isn't it?
Yeah, which is half a billion people as a minimal. I would think that would be like a minimal area in virtue in which to continue the civilization of our planet instead of being kept at that minimal, kept at that level. But in any case, there is that point in which they know what amount of people it will take to keep things going and have it go in the right direction, too.
Well, Michael, here is a interesting question for you. Dear Michael, did you have a girlfriend the day you asked your question to the Maui Sky in 1971?
Yes.
Don't know why that's significant, but it's an interesting question.
Yes. It's interesting because there was an event which, you know, was with her, and we both looked up, and darn, there was something coming straight down from the sky, like a star falling straight at us, and then bang, it was just after dusk. They were parked there someplace looking out in the ocean, and bang, it looked up, and the next thing you know, it was like morning. So we had lost the entire evening together, not knowing what the heck went on. But that was not the one, that was not the event that took me. I think it was more involved with her.
Yeah, I mean, she was involved as well. It wasn't like they just took you and then she said you're crazy. She must have experienced something, right?
Yeah.
Now, did your relationship continue with this person or not?
Didn't continue much longer, no.
Do you think that had anything to do with it?
I think it was very strange in how things came about because both of us gained celestial insight at a higher level, but knew that we weren't supposed to pursue it together, so we went our separate ways.
Well, folks, if you want to send a question to this show or any show on this broadcast, or station rather, hit us up at dj@artistfirst.com and we'll ask those questions. You know, I do too many shows. I do 30 shows a week, folks, so forgive me. Like Michael says, my one remaining brain cell is way overtaxed at this point. Did we discuss the idea that possibly our solar system is an unrealized binary star system?
Definitely possible, because most systems tend to have been such a system, because the binary star systems are quite common.
And for listeners that don't know, instead of one sun, there are two suns. In fact,
one doesn't have to be lit.
But and also, I've heard that binary star systems are the norm, and it's rather unusual to have just one sun. But, you know, I'm not an astronomer, but that's what I hear in my research. Again, I wanted to talk about this last week. I didn't remember if we got it in or not, but watched an interesting program about that. A gentleman believes that we are in a binary star system, that the star is a small, very, very, very dim dwarf that makes a circulation, an orbit rather, every 26 million years. And time's up. It's coming back. What are your thoughts? Is that even a plausible idea? And therefore explaining what's happened. You know, every 26 million years, there's a mass extinction event. Why is that? Or something very, very bad goes wrong, according to this scientist, in a pattern of measurable time. It's not random. It's incremental. What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that it is probably true, simply because in my exploration in some of the texts in the Urantia book, does give indication that our solar system had or still has that extra sun or extra body that is responsible for helping create the actual extraplanetary bodies.
Well, and some folks say, well, gee, with all our technology, we would have seen it by now. Or would we? It's very small. It might only be 20 or 30 miles across, yet it might have extreme density. And if it's burned out, if it's black or gray, how are you going to see it?
When Nancy Leader was here, I asked her about that because of the fact that our indicator planet X and Nibiru, if that was the same body as this one we're talking about right now that has this tremendous long period of on an orbit or just a period of interjection into our solar system, and she said it wasn't the same one. So there's probably multiple bodies that are. In fact, I did get this from the Celestials the other night, which was how they corrected my mind in terms of looking at only one planet X. This is, it was put to me in a simple way, don't you realize how many other celestial bodies are interacting with your solar system, coming in from various angles? And a good example was the many comets that we already see, and many of which are not known. You know, they're new to our observation. So undoubtedly there are more. So I presume that this long period body that according to the Urantia book, was a interloper, sort of like kind of joined in an extremely long orbit that he was kind of coasting along and then came along and bumped into our planet, our solar system, or our sun, and then began to help create the extrasolar planetary bodies.
The Colbrin Bible, which I have not gotten through, I think maybe the first four books of the 11 books of that document, it talks about, is it the Nemesis they call it? It's exactly, in my mind, but you know, only having gotten through the first part of it, it's exactly what Nancy Leader describes. I see the parallel. They're talking about the same thing. Of course, it could be two different bodies, right? It may not be identical piece of rock out there, but I believe it's called the Nemesis, and that it returns periodically, and there's nothing you can do about it, and make arrangements and rebuild. It's going to happen. Colbrin Bible. Get out there and download that, folks. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. I wish I had more time to read it. Just like I wish time to read the Urantia book. Somebody want to send me a copy? I'll try and stay up late at night and start reading that. I hear it's available online now.
Oh, it's been for a while, yeah.
Well, again, I wish I had as much time to read.
But anyway, you know, one of the interesting things, I've used the Urantia book to help categorize the events that both Riley and I did incur and find them well documented and outlined and described within the boundaries of the Urantia book. And again, the boundaries of the Urantia books, I will tell you that it is not an all-encompassing book. It is a wonderfully enlightening book with a lot of information, but it is not all-encompassing. So there's there's much more that the celestials have in store that that are not revealed.
Are you aware of any other book that would have more information or accompanying information to the Book of Urantia?
Not really. As far as it being put together in more modern terms. And Urantia book, of course, is in the, from the 1930s, so it's not exactly modern.
And I was reading up about that, the publisher and the contributing people. Is it true that Edgar Cayce contributed to the current published book?
I'm not sure. I don't believe he did, although I believe he was a reader of it.
And you got to wonder, if this book was handed down by celestial beings, you can imagine some guy walks into the publisher back in the 30s and says, you better look at this.
It was similar, yeah. There was also some very interesting things that were revealed that couldn't be, published, so they disappeared from a locked safe. In other words, there were papers that were read, reviewed by the group who were reviewing it, and they said, okay, we put it in the safe, and they went back into the safe. The safe was still locked, and it was gone, sort of vaporized.
Oh, man. Wow.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah, there's materials that we can handle and use that will, just disappear on command. It's essentially a type of Urantia material that is physical but also spiritual. So it sort of like disappears.
Well, we'd like to say hello to, I took a quick peek at where people are tuning in around the world, and you seem to have a nice listenership in Yuen Long in the district of Hong Kong. Say hello to our Chinese listeners across the pond tonight. And, of course, all you guys tuning in stateside, we really appreciate your support of this program, everyone. Did we ever answer Jim Borth as to whether we wanted him to start the project of transcribing all of the shows?
I think he's going to take that up on his leisure, perhaps.
You know, we do put it out there to the public, so there's really, we can't stop you, Jim. I mean, we wouldn't try either. It's not a matter of us. I guess you're free. It's a free country, and you're free to do. Remember the Celestials, it's all about free will. If that's what you want to do, Jim, I guess you have our permission. As long as, with one caveat. As long as you don't commercialize it. We don't make money on the Project Urantia program. We could sell advertising. We get over 100,000 listeners a broadcast. There's money in this show. We choose not to. So if you do transcribe that, we only ask that you do it and give it away for free. Don't sell Google ads on your website like some of these guys up there in Canada do. They steal all our shows and try to make money on it. That's wrong. Please don't do that. Is that okay with you, Michael?
Yeah, that sounds quite right.
Well, at least if he does make money, then he should send it to you.
No way.
Well, Michael, without this you on this broadcast, I mean, the show exists because of you. It started with Riley, and that's all fine and dandy, and Riley's all off doing stuff. But, I think listeners who have tuned into this program, we've gotten away from some of the sophomoric humor that goes along with some of those old shows, and I think this has become a far more intellectual and honest discussion from your standpoint. Not that there's anything wrong with old Riley shows at all, but you're certainly a different personality and present the material in a different fashion. And I think just looking at the numbers, obviously our listeners approve wholeheartedly.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things that Riley went through the same process in the New Jerusalem, and he sort of leveled off in a certain area. I sort of skimmed through some of those areas and continued my ascent on discovery, and was guided by my questions, and these questions continued. And some of the things that are interesting is how they used space-time and how space-time works. in their perspective and things like that. And these things are, you know, still in my head. So if you ever want to get into those things, it could take a number of shows to get through those things.
This is strange. Greg Scivolacki, I know you're listening tonight, and I know that Michael brought that point up, and Greg's been yelling at his computer all night going, Z-Man, I gave you a question to ask Michael. The show's almost over. Are you going to ask him the question? And it was about space-time, and I just remembered that. Greg's a friend at work, a co-worker of mine, and he asked me to ask you this. He would like to know that throughout the universe, is time, are there pockets of the universe, wait, I'm going to make sure I get the question right, where time passes in a different fashion? In other words, the way he asked it, if there's a planet that may take, if how did he describe it? I'm stumbling here.
Before you move on to that idea, let's look at what time is in terms of what we look at it. We look at it in terms of a linear event having a beginning, a middle, and an end, a kind of progression down a line. But when it comes right down to other levels or other dimensional areas, time is somewhat delinked. And this is how they overcome gravity, they overcome movement in space, by working around being perfectly synchronized with the Master Chronodex. The Master Chronodex organized the universe in a way to keep everything in sync. And that's the universe that we understand, the one that we can touch and feel. But the ones that are beyond that are not responsive to gravity and time, are essentially the timeless elements, are not working and functioning with the Chronodex, which keeps, I guess, a lot of the vibration of our dimension alive to ourselves. But if we are able, and we possess properties which are able to expand into the other dimensions, which are timeless in space, dimensionless in terms of being keyed into time, the time constant. So there's a lot more to that in terms of, you know, getting it out there and understanding it. But it started in for our understanding with the start of it, you might say the Big Bang, but for the majority of the universe, it already existed in terms of the way time functions in terms of not necessarily a pure string, but one in which there are many intersections and gates and ins and outs and ways of traversing.
Well, Greg's question was, if you lived on a planet that's year was maybe, you know, 700 days instead of 365, and maybe their day was 35 hours instead of 24 hours, a being living on a planet like that, would they still live the same number of hours in their lifetime as they would perhaps being on a different planet where the years were shorter and the days were shorter?
This is probably wouldn't be. It would probably be localized. This is another thing that is important in terms of being here on our planet and adjusted toward our planet. Being taken off, and even for myself, being taken only a little ways away. Well, that's a long way in terms of our abilities, our human abilities, go to Saturn and you know, be away. But there's a lot of imbalances that can happen, that do happen, and they gotta adjust. So, yeah, definitely there would be a different, if you take the two individuals and clock them all together in terms of one standard, you would see them quite different.
Well, there you go, Greg. We got it in with about 3 seconds left to go. Thank you for sort of helping to remind me to ask you that question. We are just out of time, everyone, but still have enough time for me to say the following. Michael does this broadcast because he told his celestial friends that he would help get the word out. Michael has nothing to sell. We do not sell commercial advertising on this station. Artists First owners pay for this broadcast and all of the download bandwidth and streaming bandwidth out of our pockets because we want to. We're hoping that you guys will listen to this broadcast and make up your own minds. Your free will is still the way to go, and hopefully this information is helpful to someone. And on behalf of all of our listeners, every broadcast, Michael, thank you so very much for the time that you give us every week.
You're certainly welcome. Thanks for the opportunity.
You can hear Michael on BroadcastEurantia.com, HelloEarth.com, and probably a dozen other places as well, folks. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. After the CBS News, it's a live Artie Kornfeld show. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Good night, Michael.
Good night.